Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this special Easter edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. We begin today with a report on Pope Benedict's Urbi et Orbi blessing following the celebration of the Easter morning Mass in St. Peter's Basilica. That's followed by reflections on the Gospel for this Easter Sunday with Jill Bevilacqua and Sean Patrick Lovett. And we take a look back at key events here in the Vatican over Holy Week with our regular guest, Joan Lewis. But first then, let's listen to what Pope Benedict had to say at his Urbi et Orbi blessing to the city of Rome and to the world.
An immense crowd, estimated at nearly 100,000 people by local authorities, filled St. Peter's Square to overflowing this Easter Sunday morning for Pope Benedict XVI's Urbi et Orbi blessing and message after Easter Sunday Mass, notwithstanding a steady rain and chilly air.
Cantemus Domino, glorioso in magnificatus est. Cantiamo al Signore veramente glorioso.
The sufferings of the Pilgrim Church and the sureness of hope in the resurrection were the main focal points of Pope Benedict's message this year.
Con la sua morte e risurrezione, Gesù Cristo ha liberato l'uomo dalla schiavitù radicale.
In Christ's death and resurrection, said Pope Benedict, in the Paschal mystery, the old man yields his place to the new man. The old life is left behind, and a new life can begin. But this spiritual exodus is the beginning of an integral liberation capable of renewing us in every dimension, human, personal, and social. The Pope went on to stress that in our days, too, humanity needs not just a superficial adjustment, but a spiritual and moral conversion. Pope Benedict said, humanity needs the salvation of the gospel.
Ha bisogno della salvezza del Vangelo per uscire da una crisi che è profonda.
Here the Holy Father's reflections turn to specific situations of concern, and he began with the Middle East, praying that there, and especially in the land sanctified by Christ's death and resurrection, peoples might accomplish a true and definitive exodus from war and violence to peace and concord. The Pope went on to address the Christian communities who were experiencing trials and sufferings, especially in Iraq, saying the risen Lord repeats to them the consoling and encouraging words that he addressed to the apostles in the upper room. Peace be with you.
Pace a voi.
The Holy Father also prayed for countries in Latin America and the Caribbean, which are seeing a resurgence of drug-related crime. To them, he said, let Easter signal the victory of peaceful coexistence and respect for the common good. Pope Benedict also addressed the people of Haiti, asking that they might accomplish their own exodus from mourning and from despair to a new hope with the help of the international community. For Chile, the Holy Father prayed that they, supported by their faith, might set about the task of reconstruction with tenacity. Turning to Africa, Pope Benedict particularly entrusted to the Lord the futures of the Democratic Republic of Congo, of Guinea, and Nigeria. He expressed the hope that in the strength of the risen Jesus, all conflicts there come to an end.
Nella forza di Gesù risorto, in Africa, si ponga fine ai conflitti che continuano a provocare distruzione e sofferenze.
The Holy Father asked the risen Lord to sustain all Christians who suffer persecution and even death for their faith, and he cited Pakistan as just one example of such a place. The Pope asked God to grant the countries afflicted by terrorism and by social and religious discrimination the strength they need to undertake the work of building dialogue and serene coexistence. The Holy Father prayed that Easter might bring light and strength to the leaders of all nations, so that economic and financial activity may finally be driven by the criteria of truth, justice, and fraternal aid.
La potenza salvifica della risurrezione di Cristo investa tutta l'umanità.
May the saving power of Christ's resurrection fill all of humanity, prayed Pope Benedict, so that it may overcome the multiple tragic expressions of a culture of death which are becoming increasingly widespread, so as to build a future of love and truth in which every human life is respected and welcomed.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, la Pasqua non opera alcuna magia.
Dear brothers and sisters, concluded Pope Benedict, Easter does not work magic. Just as the Israelites found the desert awaiting them on the far side of the Red Sea, so the Church, after the resurrection, always finds history filled with joy and hope, grief and anguish. And yet this history is changed. It is marked by a new and eternal covenant. It is truly open to the future. For this reason, saved by hope, let us continue our pilgrimage, bearing in our hearts the song that is ancient and yet ever new. Let us sing to the Lord. Glorious is His triumph.
Cantiamo al Signore, è veramente glorioso.
After his message, Pope Benedict had greetings for pilgrims in many languages, including English.
Messe Christen Church, Risen Christ, be with you all.
Now, following that report on Pope Benedict's Easter activities here in the Vatican, let's listen as Jill Bevilacqua and Sean Patrick Lovett present reflections on the reading for this Easter Sunday. In Jill's programme, there's more in the Sunday Gospel than meets the eye.
Early in the morning, on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb. She saw that the stone had been moved away. So she ran off to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, and told them, "The Lord has been taken from the tomb. We don't know where they have put him." At that, Peter and the other disciple started out on their way toward the tomb. They were running side by side, but then the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He did not enter, but bent down to peer in, and saw the wrappings lying on the ground. Presently, Simon Peter came along behind him and entered the tomb. He observed the wrappings on the ground and saw the piece of cloth, which had covered the head, not lying with the wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the disciple who had arrived first at the tomb went in. He saw and believed. Remember, as yet, they did not understand the scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead.
When Jesus was buried on the evening of Good Friday, there was not only among his friends an atmosphere of sadness and despondency, but also a sense of urgency. For it was the vigil of the Sabbath, known as the Day of Preparation. And as a biblical scholar writes,
that particular Sabbath was especially festive because it coincided with the Passover. The obligation to rest was one of the most binding and began with the appearance of the first stars of the vigil.
This is confirmed by what Luke writes.
It was preparation day, and the Sabbath was imminent. Meanwhile, the women who had come from Galilee with Jesus were following behind. They took note of the tomb and of the position of the body. Then they returned and prepared spices and ointments, and on the Sabbath day they rested, as the law required.
Whether they slept, though, is another matter. It must surely have been the longest Sabbath they ever remembered. And unknown to them, it was also the last Sabbath of all, to be lived in the old way, or at any rate with any real conviction. And at some point, as we may read,
the first day of the week, in memory of Jesus' resurrection, was named by Christians the Lord's Day, and the obligation of keeping it as a holy day was transferred to it from the Sabbath.
wrote Saint Jerome in the 4th century.
The Lord's Day, the day of the resurrection, the day of Christians. That is our day.
And Saint Isidore in the 7th century wrote,
"This day the Jews did not observe, but it was declared by the Christians in honour of the Lord's resurrection, and the celebration began from that time."
But for the holy women, on that first Easter morning, this was all in the future. And the old Sabbath was barely over when, at the first sight of dawn, as Luke writes, they went to the tomb with the spices they had prepared. The embalming, however, was never to take place. Meanwhile, what had been going on during that historic Sabbath? Let's listen to this extract from an old homily for Holy Saturday, which is quoted in the 1992 Catechism.
Today there is a great silence on the earth, a great silence and solitude, a great silence because the King is sleeping. The earth is dismayed and is silent because God made flesh has fallen asleep and has woken those who had been sleeping for centuries. He is going to look for the first father, like the lost sheep. He wants to go down to visit those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death. God and his Son go to free from their sufferings Adam and Eve, who are in prison. I am your God, who have become your Son for you. Awake, you who sleep. In fact, I did not create you to remain a prisoner in hell. Arise from the dead. I am the life of the dead.
He descended into hell. The third day he rose again from the dead. In the section devoted to an explanation of the Apostles' Creed, the Catechism comments.
The descent of Christ into the underworld and his resurrection from the dead on the third day are professed in the same article of faith, because in his Easter he made life spring forth from the abyss of death.
Today we very rarely reflect on the descent into hell, perhaps because the word suffers from ambiguity, but also because of our modern distaste for all references to hell and devils. But, as one scholar writes, medieval men and women took the devil and his works more seriously. In their pageants and miracle plays, Christ's descent into hell was vividly represented. The harrowing of hell, as it was called, was based on a popular legend which had its origin in the apocryphal Gospel of Nicodemus, writes our scholar.
This legend is dramatized in all the English cycles, represented in sculpture and painted glass, and used again and again in the sermons.
A brilliant example of the harrowing of hell in stained glass can still be seen in the 15th century church of St. Mary the Virgin in Fairford, Gloucestershire. I was taken by a friend one summer day to this unique church, which has no fewer than 28 windows in stained glass portraying 1,000 figures. As the guidebook declares proudly, no other parish church in England has retained a complete set of late medieval glass. Window 6, divided into three parts, shows the deposition on the left, the entombment in the centre, and on the right, the harrowing. Here, as the guidebook explains,
Christ rescues Adam and Eve from hell and proclaims the good news to imprisoned souls. One soul, still impenitent, is seen behind red-hot bars.
And you can almost feel the heat. Although we use the word harrowing today as an adjective, meaning painful in the extreme, referring to an experience or even only something painful to watch, a dictionary will tell us that the verb to harrow was a 13th century word meaning to rob or despoil, and that it was used especially with reference to Christ's descent to hell to carry off the souls of righteous people. Back in the 9th century, these lines formed part of an Easter hymn by Rabanus Maurus, abbot of the famous monastery of Fulda in Germany.
Breathing out his soul, Christ entered the underworld. Triumphant, he banished the shadows of death. The just he snatched away. The enemy he bound, giving heaven to the good. while evil men were left in their pains.
But by Easter morning, all this has been accomplished, and the scene shifts once again to earth, to the empty tomb. What happened next, and who came to the tomb at first light, is recounted in their different ways and with varying details by all four evangelists. But who saw the risen Jesus first? This was often asked us as children by our teacher of religion. It was, of course, a catch question. Although it's not mentioned in any of the Gospels, clearly the first person Jesus appeared to must have been his mother. To the evangelists, it would have seemed too obvious to need recording. Not so obvious would have been his appearance to other women. As for who went to the tomb with the spices, among a variety of names recorded, only one appears in all four Gospels, that of Mary Magdalene. And today's Gospel, that of John, chosen to be read on Easter Sunday in all 3 years of the liturgical cycle, gives prominence to that one name, Mary Magdalene. Reading on, we find that after they'd been to the tomb, Peter and John returned home. Mary Magdalene, however, who must have followed them back to the tomb, stayed behind, weeping. And it was then that she stooped to look into the tomb. There she saw two angels, who asked her why she was weeping. "They have taken my Lord away, and I don't know where they have put him." Something prompts her to turn round, and standing there is the risen Jesus. Taking him for the gardener, she asks if he has removed the body. But he speaks only one word, Mary, and as St. John writes,
"She knew him then. Rabuni, she said in Hebrew, master."
What followed is told this way by poet George MacDonald.
"He stands in haste, he cannot stop. Home to his God he fares. Go, tell my brothers I go up to my father, mine and theirs. Run, Mary, lift thy heavenly voice, cry, cry, and heed not how. Make all the new risen world rejoice, its first apostle, thou."
Apostle, from the Greek apostolos, is a messenger. Mary Magdalene is described in the liturgical calendar simply as disciple of the Lord. But because of the unique privilege of being the first to see the risen Lord, she's been called the Apostle of the Apostles. And in the revised calendar, her feast day on the 22nd of July has been classified as an obligatory memorial for the whole church. Not only John records that Magdalene saw the risen Jesus first, Mark, in his final summing up, writes,
"He, rising early the first day of the week, appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast seven devils."
Which, as Piero Bargellini points out, does not necessarily mean that she was a sinner. For the traditional image of Mary Magdalene is that of the penitent prostitute, usually identified as the woman who poured precious ointment over the feet of Jesus, causing Judas to exclaim, "Why wasn't this ointment sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor?" Modern scholarship shows us a different Magdalene. Freed of her demons, she follows Jesus from Galilee, together with other women, tends to his needs, stands at the foot of the cross, and is rewarded at the tomb by the vision of the risen Lord. And now let's listen to this Easter poem by Gerard Manley Hopkins, who in the opening verse invites us symbolically to imitate the woman in the Gospel and spare no expense in celebrating the risen Christ.
"Break the box and shed the nard. Stop not now to count the cost. Hither bring pearl, opal, sard. Reck not what the poor have lost. Upon Christ throw all away. Know ye, this is Easter Day. Build his church and deck his shrine, empty though it be on earth. Ye have kept your choicest wine. Let it flow for heavenly mirth. Pluck the harp and breathe the horn. Know ye not 'tis Easter morn? Gather gladness from the skies. Take a lesson from the ground.
Flowers do ope their heavenward eyes, and a springtime joy have found. Earth throws winter's robes away, decks herself for Easter day. Beauty now for ashes wear, perfumes for the garb of woe, chaplets for dishevelled hair, dances for sad footsteps slow. Open wide your hearts that they let in joy this Easter day. Seek God's house, in happy throng, crowded let his table be. Mingle praises, prayer and song, singing to the Trinity. Henceforth let your souls alway make each morn an Easter day.
Thanks there to Jill Bevilacqua and Sean Patrick Lovett, who will be back again at this same time next week with another edition of There's More in the Sunday Gospel Than Meets the Eye. Right now, stay tuned as our regular guest Joan Lewis takes a look back at key events here in the Vatican over Holy Week. Joan, thank you for joining us here on this Easter Day, the great Feast of the Resurrection.
And happy Easter to you. Always a very beautiful, long week of masses and liturgies and processions and Via Crucis in the Vatican. And
the real culmination of the Church's year, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I can remember as a child, though, wondering how come Christmas wasn't more important? Because if Jesus hadn't been born, he couldn't have died. So
that's a very rigorous childhood logic, isn't it?
Yes, it really, really is.
But let's look back for the moment at some of the events of this Holy Week, which began, of course, on Palm Sunday with a celebration of World Youth Day. And it was actually the 25th anniversary, wasn't it, of the
Does
beginning
it seem
of
possible?
These events.
You and I were here when the first one,
right.
You know,
makes
took,
us very old,
took
it?
Place. Yeah, well, we were teenagers at the time. Give me a break. But no, it was a wonderful celebration, as you said, the 25th anniversary. And, of course, Palm Sunday is always a beautiful celebration. In the last 25 years, it's been World Youth Day is celebrated on a diocesan level on Palm Sunday. So all throughout the world, young people were united. And a huge, huge crowd in St. Peter's Square for Pope Benedict's Mass, at which he did recall that 25 years ago, he said, my beloved predecessor invited young people to profess their faith in Christ. And he said, today I renew this appeal in the new generations to bear witness with, and I love this, with the mild but luminous power of truth. Bear witness that the men and women of the third millennium may not lack their most authentic model, Jesus Christ. And the Pope urged young people to be not afraid when following Christ leads to misunderstandings and affronts. And he said, serve him in the weakest and the most disadvantaged people, especially your own peers in difficulty. So very beautiful words. And even the preceding Thursday, of course, when he'd met with the young people, he said the same thing. Do not be afraid, echoing, obviously, John Paul's words of many years ago.
Monday, March the 29th, then, as you mentioned, was the day that the Church chose to remember the fifth anniversary of the death of John Paul II, even though he actually died on April the 2nd.
Right, which, of course, this year was Good Friday. So you don't even have Masses on Good Friday. There would have been no way to liturgically, correctly celebrate the anniversary on the actual day of death. But for the Mass Monday evening, also present was Cardinal Stanislaw Żywiec, the Archbishop of Krakow, naturally for just under 40 years, the personal private secretary to John Paul. And of course, there were many pilgrims from Poland. And in the beginning of his homily, the Pope focused on Isaiah's parable to the servant whose faith is unshakable and whose energy does not diminish until completing the task assigned to him. And this, of course, people listening are already imagining that what the prophet says of the servant, the Pope explained, we can apply to the beloved John Paul II, how the Pope called him to his service, entrusting him with tasks of ever greater responsibility over the years, and then accompanied him with his grace and his assistance. He said during his long pontificate, he made prodigious efforts to proclaim the law firmly. But he said he, in his pontificate, John Paul proclaimed this without weakness or hesitation, especially when he had to face resistance, hostility, and rejection, and in a way that does make you think of the accusations that have come in recent days to our own Pope Benedict himself.
Many people saw that as a kind of response.
To his accusations of the Pope covering up or being somehow implicated in the cases in different countries of a cover-up of the sexual abuse instances involving, you know, clergy. So you can almost feel his own sadness at that. He, a priest who loves God, who loves the priesthood, who loves the church, his huge sadness, which we saw in his letter to the Irish Catholics. Anyway, no, it was another beautiful point that the Pope made returning to the Monday Mass was he said the whole life of the Venerable John Paul II passed under the sign of charity, of the capacity to give himself generously, unreservedly, without measure or calculation. And what moved him was his love for Christ, a superabundant and unconditional love. And, of course, that's what our faith is all about. It's not about laws or commandments or rules. They're there. Our faith is about a man. It's Christ. We're Christians because we're supposed to be followers of Christ. And if anybody followed him to the max, it was John Paul.
Just moving on to Wednesday then, Pope Benedict focused, didn't he, on the most important events of this Holy Week, the Triduum,
right. These
3 days commemorating Jesus' passion and death and being laid in the tomb.
And he explains the Easter Triduum, a word, of course, referring Triduum to 3 days. And he said, this is a time devoted to silent prayer and contemplation of the mystery of Christ's passion, of the Lord's passion, death, and resurrection. And he said, the liturgies these days, these past days for us, invite us to ponder Christ's saving sacrifice and his promise of new life. And the Pope made particular reference to this year for priests when he said the Holy Thursday Chrism Mass, which was in St. Peter's Basilica, and he said this is when priests renew the promises made on the day of their ordination. So how special this was this year, the Chrism Mass for priests in this year for priests. Pope Benedict said, may priests everywhere be conformed ever more closely to Christ as heralds of his message of hope, reconciliation, and peace. And then, of course, on Holy Thursday, we always have two Masses, and there was the Mass of the Lord's Supper, which is at the Pope's Cathedral Church of St. John Lateran, and that was celebrated Thursday evening, recalls the institution, of course, of two sacraments, of the Eucharist and Holy Orders.
With the ceremony of the washing of the feet, of course, a very symbolic gesture of service that the Pope always carries out.
Very, very beautiful gesture, and carried out throughout the world in Masses that take place on Holy Thursday evening. And then the Pope spoke of Good Friday, and of course, for years, you know, he's led the Via Crucis at the Colosseum, as he did this year. And then, actually, the most astonishing thing, if you remember, 5 years ago was when he wrote the Reflections. He was Cardinal Ratzinger, not yet the Pope. And I mean, like 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, he was going to be the Pope, but he wrote the Reflections for the Via Crucis, which have been quoted many, many times since then. So the Pope talks about Good Friday. He says, we enter into the mystery of Christ's redemptive death, and this invites us to contemplate the deep relationship between the Last Supper and the sacrifice of Calvary. And then obviously moving to the Easter Vigil, the Pope said this vigil proclaims the resurrection of Christ and his victory over sin and death. And obviously the vigil going right into Easter Sunday, which we are celebrating. And he said, may the joy of the resurrection even now fill our hearts as we prepare to celebrate the great events of the Lord's Passover from death to the fullness of life. So a wonderful summary of the Triduum and events our listeners will have seen on television and heard the radio reports of them as they took place.
And just time to wish all our listeners a wonderful, blessed Easter, and to thank you, Joan, for being with us once
Indeed. Again
to look back over these events.
And
of
happy
Holy Week.
Easter to everyone.
And from all of us here at the English programme of Vatican Radio, may I wish you a very happy Easter day and a wonderful Easter week. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.